And so this is kind of David's crippled hand story, and it has to do with him becoming the king. You know, he's been running in the wilderness for 7 years from Saul, who's been trying to kill him because Saul wants to be the king, and David's the anointed, and he's jealous. And so David's been out of commission for a while, learning the lamb. But also during that time, the presence of God has been not in Jerusalem. It's been in Shiloh, and it's been far away from where the ark wanted to find its rest, which is in his body, in his wife. In Jerusalem is a picture of that. And so one of the first things that David wanted to do was to bring his ark, to bring his, the presence of the Lord back in to where the where God wanted to find his rest, you know, which is a picture of Jesus being in our hearts and in a certain spirit of being our life and loved and just the beauty of that relationship. So David, with a really good heart, wanted to bring the ark back into Jerusalem, wanted to bring the presence of God. The only place the real presence of God was found in the earth at that time was in the ark. So he wanted to bring it back, and he's got really great, you know, intentions and a good heart of love. But, so he's really excited about it. It's one of the first things that he does. And so this is his story. I love this chapter. It's so cool. But okay, we'll just read a little bit. So this is how David starts it. Again, David gathered together all the chosen men of Israel, which was 30,000. So that's a lot. It's a lot of might and power and people. And verse 2 says, and David arose and went with all the people who were with him from Baal Judah to bring up from there the ark of God, whose name is called by the name of the Lord of hosts, who dwelt between the cherubims. So he's going to Baal Judah to bring up the ark with this 30,000. I mean, that's a huge mega church type thing of all these chosen men. So he's gathering a whole bunch of people, and it's big pomp. And then the scriptures define this God that he's going to collect and pick up to transport as the one who dwelleth between the wings of the cherubim, or dwelleth between the cherubim. And the cherubim are, you guys know kind of what that is in the Holy of Holies. So they're just these two-winged creatures that have their wings spread over him. And they're just, you know, they're covering and protecting the presence of the Lord. There's this, you know, wings aren't swords drawn, you know, or huge steel rods of protection. Wings are feathers, but they're feathers that are fragile and, you know, they can snap in a minute. But they cover things, and they cover and nurture and protect in weakness, but in love. And so he says, this is the guy you're going to pick up and transport, is the one who dwells between these feathers that are covering him in love. And he's just night and day, you know, like the wife of the lamb. They just go like this with their wings, and they protect him. And like, that's all he's known, you know, the presence of the Lord. No one's in there with him, but, you know, the rod of Aaron and the stone tablets, you know what I mean? The rod that budded, the stone tablets, and then there's these, the only thing that has any semblance of something that's of a life form are these two cherubim, and they're like just made of metals, but they represent something in his heart and a way that his bride will carry him and cover him and be with him. And they're not mighty men with swords drawn or brass shields or gold shields, or, you know, they're not these two warriors going, yeah, you know, like that over the ark, you know, with their swords going like this, you know, and bowing. It's just like these cherubim, these little fragile things with these wings, lovingly covering him tenderly. Night and day, night and day, night and day. And so the first clue to David should have been that this is the God that dwells between the wings of the cherubim. But he's going to go with 30,000 chosen men with swords and horses and strength and glory and pomp. And you know what I'm saying? And he's going to, like, this is going to honor God. This is going to move the Lord. this is how he wants to be carried from one place to another. That's the gathering that he needs, you know what I mean, to truly be glorified and taken to a better place in the earth, more deeper into the people. So that's how he approaches it. And so verse 3 says, so they set the ark of God upon a new cart. Now, you know, there's ways that when Moses was face to face with God, God said, this is how you will carry the ark through the wilderness until it finds its place of rest. And at that point, you will take the staves out, and it shall forever dwell in Zion. Just, you know, so the scriptures say that this ark needs to be carried by the hands of men on staves. But David, trying to really, really, really go the extra mile in his mind, says, let's build a new cart. Let's build something flashy and brand new and, you know, modern. Staves were for the, you know, that generation that didn't have ox carts. You know what I mean? There's new things that are relevant. And these relevant ways are the ways that God wants to be carried in this generation. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a new generation. So staves are for the way old people, you know. Mm-hmm. Even though Moses saw that in the heart and eyes of God and wrote it in the scriptures. Let's do the new cart. So now he's got 30,000 chosen men. They're the like, if I could have a church, I'd want those 30,000 men in the church. And if we wanted to carry a new move of God in the earth, we'd build a new ox cart to do it. You know what I'm saying? And so everyone's like, man, this David, he's not only got a heart for God, he's got relevance, and he's got just super cool, you know, a super cool church to work with. And you're thinking, God's really going to use this guy. He's special. He's got it all going for him. That's not going to happen. So they set the ark of God upon a new cart and brought it out of the house of Abinadab, which was in Gibeah. So he's taking the ark out of this, you know, like this foreign place. And again, he's thinking, I'm doing God's service, because the ark, the presence of the Lord, is in a place of reproach, because he's with the heathen and he's in Gibeah and it's terrible. And I'm going to save his life and take him into Zion, you know, and I'm going to do it in the best fashion possible. And, you know, so here we go. And he gets it out of Gibeah, saves its life, puts it on the new cart, and he has Ahio, one of the sons of Abinadab, driving the new cart. Who is this man? I don't know. He's driving the cart that's carrying the ark. That's interesting. Mm-hmm. Who is he? We don't know. And they, verse 4 says, and they brought it out of the house of Abinadab, which was at Gibeah, accompanying the ark of God, and Ahio went before the ark. And David and all the house of Israel played before the Lord on all manner of instruments made of fir and wood, on harps and psalteries and timbrels, on cornets and cymbals. So he's like, not only are we going to have a new cart that's relevant, 30,000 of the best people we could find to do this, we're going to have, we're going to create instruments out of fir wood, and we're going to have trumpets and cymbals and the best praise and worship on the best equipment with the top-notch amplification for our generation with great musicians leading the ark to Zion. And this is going to move God's heart. It doesn't say anything about them playing those instruments with all their heart and all their strength. Mm-hmm. It just says that they were really nice instruments. Mm-hmm. And there was a great variety. So now you're kind of, you know, when the Holy Spirit was sharing this with me, it's like, you know, it just keeps getting worse, you know, because they keep doing it in a way of the flesh, you know, and it doesn't even matter if it's, I mean, you could say flesh or spirit, but really, it's not according to his heart, not according to the way he wants to be carried as a person, I mean, as a being, because it wasn't just the presence of God, but it was the person of God was in that, the being of God, and he is a being with a heart, had a desire on how he wanted to be handled, the way he wanted to be carried, and they were doing everything wrong, according to his heart. If the being in the ark was a different kind of God, he would have loved this approach. It would have been like, mm-hmm, awesome. You know, you guys are doing everything right. I love to be glorified with strength and honor, and all this stuff just moves me. You know, that would not be Christ crucified. That wouldn't be our God. So all this stuff is happening. And by verse 6, they had gone far enough to come to Nacon's threshing floor. And a threshing floor is a place where there's, and I know y'all know this, but just to say, it's a place where there's all kinds of bumpy places. So when the ox goes over that, or the cart goes over with the grain in it that hasn't been threshed, it shakes it and pounds it enough, and the ox's feet step on it enough that it separates the wheat from the chaff. So the chaff is winnowed away, but the wheat, which has the seed in it, remains for further harvesting and production. So the threshing floor spiritually is the place where the with that which is flesh and that which is the seed, which is Christ in us, gets, you know, shaken and bruised and dealt with, sometimes violently, to get rid of the flesh. So, but not just because God hates flesh, but so the seed is what remains. It's just to get the seed as preeminent. So you can imagine what's going to happen spiritually and physically once this procession gets to a threshing floor. You know, something's got to happen. It can't. This cannot pass the threshing floor or the cross without some big thing coming. Something's going to come down the pike. And if anyone had half a sense of knowing his heart, they would have realized, do not go anywhere near the threshing floor looking like this, because something bad is going to happen. And I mean, that's true in our lives personally. That's true in churches' lives. That's true in, I think, every realm, that you can go so far with that kind of procession. But once you hit the cross or the threshing floor, things are going to shake, rattle, and roll. And it isn't man doing it. It's the cross doing it. It's that God's allowing it to get rid of things that are not really Christ and are not really the seed and don't really bring forth the glory, which is Christ crucified. So things start to shake at Nacon's threshing floor. So once they get there, when they came to Nacon's threshing floor, Uzzah put forth his hand to the ark of God and took hold of it, because the oxen are starting to shake it. So we have now the oxen are starting to shake and the ark of God is shaking, and that's all supposed to happen on a threshing floor. That's okay. When you have six men holding staves or four men holding staves, there's a balance there. There's going to be an ability to pass through that because of the way the body's carrying it and the spirit in which you're carrying it. But when you have one guy with an ox cart, he's going to lay his hand directly on the Lord in a manner that's not right, not crucified, not made one through the cross. To protect the Lord, that's not the wings of the cherubim that have been gathered in, passed through death to come into oneness, and then covered in a certain spirit. You know what I mean? And this is all type and shadow. But this guy is just, whoever he is, we don't know who Ahio is. He's just some dude from Gibeah. And he's slapping his hand on there because the ox cart is starting to shake. And he's putting his hand to what God's trying to do in the work of his cross, and putting his hand to it to make everything okay. You know, when everything's not okay, and things do need to shake, and do need to shake out what's not the Son. So he puts his hand to it, and the anger of the Lord, verse 7, is kindled against Uzzah. I'm sorry, Uzzah's the one who does it. And God smites him there for his error, and he dies by the ark of the Lord. So this guy that David's asked to help carry the ark, you know, does a good, kindly, compassionate deed, mm-hmm. and decides to just be a good helper and steady the ark, and he falls dead beside it. And David's pretty freaked out, and he's freaked out by this. The Lord was displeased because the Lord had broken forth in anger against Uzzah, and he called the name of that place Pirazua, and I think that means the breaking forth, something like that, to this day. So verse 9 says, so David's afraid of the Lord that day and says, how shall the ark of the Lord come to me? So David's just like, I thought I knew him. I thought I understood him. I thought I knew his ways. I thought everything I was doing was going to bring him glory and take him to a better place in the people, and minister to his heart in ways that he wasn't getting. And all I get is God's displeasure and one dead man and 30,000 confused mighty men from all around Israel, Judah.
Scared, probably.
What?
They were probably all scared after that.
Yeah, and probably not really wanting to be a part of David's next adventure. But yeah, so David's freaked out, and probably he he's probably got his feelings hurt a little bit, like, so I'm going to do this for you, God, and that's how you're going to treat me, you know. What, you know, maybe not, but I bet there was a little, I think there was a little bit of that mixed in there, but I only God knows. But it does say in verse 10 that David would not remove the ark of the Lord unto him into the city of David. But David carried it aside into the house of Obed-Edom the Gittite. And the ark of the Lord continued in the house of Obed-Edom the Gittite for 3 months, and the Lord blessed Obed-Edom and all his household. So David just pretty much freaks out, you know, and doesn't know what to do. So he just takes it to the guy's house that's close by in Obed-Edom. This is a Gittite. It's not even part of the people, you know, Israel. And says, you take it. I mean, that's pretty freaked out to not even carry it to the next, like, holy kind of semblance of a holy place. He just throws it off on this guy, Obed-Edom. And so Obed-Edom's, like, literally got the living God in his house. So awesome. And David's, like, really, I don't know, but it's got to be, like, 3 months or what is it? It was told David, yeah, 3 months. So he's 3 months there. You know, David's really freaked out because he's left the presence of God in a Gittite's house for 3 months. I don't know what's going on in David. For 3 months, he's that freaked out. And this is the ark. This is where, like, this is the guy who said, put a tent in my backyard so I can night and day minister to the presence of the Lord. This is that. That's the ark in Obed-Edom's house. Something's going on in David. And he must be going through all kinds. And if you read the Psalms, you can realize that maybe David wasn't just like, Lord, I'm waiting upon thee with a heart of purity and trust, mm-hmm. with you know, such sweet, serene love and confidence mm-hmm. that you know what you're doing. He's probably going, what is going on? And, you know, he's crying and he's getting upset with the Lord. Mm-hmm. And he's, I mean, I can see David really, really going through all the junk that any human being truly does go through. Even though we kind of pretend in ourselves we're not going through it. And I mean, God knows. And David knows God knows. And David's just probably going through it with the Lord. And so God's sitting there and blessing Obed-Edom's household. Like, they are just getting the glory. I mean, they're like, oh my God, the living God is in our house. And they're blessed beyond measure. I mean, the blessing of God is upon Obed-Edom's household. Who knows what those 3 months were like for Obed-Edom? But we know they were pretty awesome because even after David got the ark from Obed-Edom, Obed-Edom left his people and became one of the main servants of the ark. In it's all through the, you can find, do a word search on the name Obed-Edom, and you'll be shocked to find where that name shows up after this. The guy wants to be with the ark the rest of his life. It's super cool. But that's just a side road. Anyway, so in verse 12 it says, so it's told King David, saying, the Lord has blessed the house of Obed-Edom and everything that pertains to him, because the ark of God's with him. So David went and brought up the ark of God from the house of Obed-Edom into the city of David with gladness. So I guess David got a little bit jealous, and he's just like, you know, that's supposed, that relationship is supposed to be where we're living. This is ours, and, you know, I'm going and getting it back. I'm getting it back. These 3 months are not a happy 3 months of my life. I miss him. Come back home to me, you know. Just come home. I want you, Jesus. So he goes with gladness, and here's the new approach, which is kind of the crippled hands part. Verse 13 says, and it was that when they who bore the ark of the Lord, now it's they who bore the ark of the Lord, not one dude driving a new ox cart. So obviously there's staves involved now. Every time they walked 6 paces, David himself would sacrifice oxen, the strength of man, you know, the strength of an ox. He'd sacrifice oxen and fatlings. So every 6 paces, David's going, not by 30,000 mighty men, not by the strength of a beast just doing it, you know, not slaughtered lambs, feathers, you know, weakness, the spirit of Christ crucified in his body, carrying him in a certain manner. Not by oxen or the strength of men or just beasts carrying a cart, but by Christ crucified in every step, Christ crucified in every touch, Christ crucified in every approach. And I won't even go a full 7 paces, which is the number of completion, without stopping and offering up my strength and offering up my might and offering up those things that would touch you in a wrong way and carry you in a wrong spirit. I will make sure this time that I'm carrying you in the way that you need me, with crippled hands. in weakness, in brokenness, poured out in your spirit, not 30,000 men on a new cart, but in smallness, in weakness, in crucifiedness, I will carry your life. And now God's pleased, because now there's the cross. Now there's an approach that is like his wife, a wife of a slaughtered lamb. Now, instead of strength, there's weakness. Instead of power, there's brokenness. You know what I'm saying? Instead of just a relevant move, there's the cross every step of the way, in reality and not just teaching. And so truly the ark is able to move forward, because it's being carried by the people who are his body, in a spirit that is his body, not just some foreigner. You know, it's like, I don't dwell in the midst of a foreign body. I crucified this old body of flesh and strength and wisdom and self-glorification and all the things that exalt another nature beside Christ crucified. That's been crucified, and I don't dwell in the midst of that kind of a body. So why am I being carried this way? Who are these bones and flesh around me? These foreigners that seem to think they're doing me service. This isn't my body. This is a foreign entity, and I need to shake free from it. And I'd rather be in Obed-Edom's house. I'd be more comfortable in his house than in the midst of Judah themselves, in the spirit in which they handle me. To me, this is awful. Get me out of here. And this is God's heart. Get me out of here. Take me to a foreigner that will love me, that's not even my people per se, than being in the midst of my people that carry me with uncrucified hands and uncrucified hearts. And so, you know, for those 3 months, God's probably really, really dealing with David's heart. Because why would he be offering fatlings and oxen every 6 steps if he hadn't started to see the cross and the true spirit of the one in the box, the one in the ark, and say, I can't begin my ministry as king, carrying the very king himself in the spirit. How can I be a king to this people if I can't even relate to the true king in the spirit in which he needs to be held and exalted and enthroned in my heart, in my approach to him? So something deep has happened in David. And it also continues when you see that verse 14, after he's offering every 6 steps, he's dancing before the Lord with all his might, girded with a linen ephod. So now there's no instruments made of fir wood and great cymbals and trumpets and all this glorious praise and worship that's just like an orchestration of magnificence in the flesh. He is naked except for the garments of a priest. And he isn't even playing an instrument. He's like, I'm not even going to pick up one of the instruments because I might glory in my musical ability. He's just dancing before the Lord like a fool. His own wife's ashamed of him. He's like, you're just too crazy. With now it's all his might, that thou would love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, all thy soul, all thy strength, and all thy mind. Love him. And David's like, now I'm loving you, and I'm doing it with everything that's in me. And I'm not just giving you anointings and giftings and great pomp and worship. I'm giving you all my heart. And I'm giving you all my heart with crucified hands that want to carry you in oneness of nature. And I want to be with you like this. And everywhere you go, I want to carry you like that. Everything I do as king, I want to do it as someone who's loving the Lord thy God with everything that's in him and carrying him in weakness. In a spirit that's like the Lamb of God, that where he can truly feel at home and at rest. And let's get him to Jerusalem this way. It may make people mock us. His own wife mocked him for carrying the ark that way. He said, my own family's mocking me. The 30,000 mighty men probably think I'm totally out of tune with God because it looks foolish. But this is the approach that I found in the heart of God. And I found it through failure, but I found it. And I will not swerve from this approach anymore, because this is the way the Father wants his Son carried in his body. This is how the Son needs to be handled in the earth. And so David, verse 15, and all the house of Israel brought up the ark of the Lord with shouting and with the sound of the trumpet. So there is this exaltation now in all the house of Israel. It's not just the 30,000 mighty men, the chosen, the good, the elite, the ones everybody wants. This is everybody is a part of carrying the heart of Jesus, because everybody's a member of his body. And they're shouting and they're exulting in the fact that, yes, we have him for who he is. Now he's coming home. He's coming home to us. And they're shouting. And the sound of the trumpet is just like, usually in the scriptures representing wake up. The Feast of Trumpets is like, wake up, the cross is coming, wake up, it's time to be gathered in his wife and body. And so the trumpet's just saying, wake up, this is who he is, this is who we are, this is how he is, this is how we are. Let's be with him in the ways that we've truly been created, the ways he's eternally needed, the ways that we were crafted as his bride and body to be. And there you have it. And his own wife mocks him, next chapter, and God renders her seedlet, you know, childless, because she cannot conceive of the God that David loves. She's not conceiving. We see that she's not conceiving physically because she's not bearing children physically. But first and foremost, spiritually, she's unable to conceive of the God that her husband is one with. And therefore, she cannot partake, because the one that he is one with is a crucified Christ. And the way that crucified Christ exists in this realm is in weakness and in foolishness and in an approach that is Christ crucified, the cross, every step of the way. And the world will never understand that, and the world will never back that. The church world, if it has the world in it, won't do that. They won't, they can't, they never will. Because at the threshing floor, it will be shaken to the point where nothing will stand but what is truly the seed. It won't. And God's set that spiritual threshing floor in every path of every person, organization, being, heart, and life that wants to go all the way into oneness, to really become a vessel of his life. That threshing floor will always be there, and no one will get past it. No flesh will pass it. But that which does go past it will be truly one with the Lamb, and will truly carry the ark of his heart with them everywhere they go. So that's, you know, that's the word the Lord gave for us today, I felt.